Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our meeting today. Thank you to the fellas who've led us. Happy Mother's Day to all of you to whom that applies, and happy Mother's Day to your families. You may never have heard of Nellie Conway, but she has had and is having a huge impact for good in your life. Her married name was Madison. Her first son, was born one March midnight in 1751, and his first name was James. James Madison, as I'm sure all of you historians know, was the fourth president of the United States. He was a small man in stature, but huge in intellect. Richard Brookhiser, in his biography of Madison, describes him as smarter than Washington or Jefferson or Monroe, and maybe smarter than Adams is the way he says it. We owe more even to Monroe because he is known as the father of the Constitution of our country. He's also described as the father of American politics, which might not stand him in quite so much honor to a lot of us, but at least will let us know he's having an impact in our lives. In Brookhiser's book, after he describes how gregarious and how well-known in the public James Madison's father was, a man who was active in church life, in community life, he was even the colonel and the local militia and so forth, and also someone who was pretty wealthy in his time, Brookhiser goes ahead to speak of Nellie Madison Conway. He says, James's mother was quieter, yet in some ways the greater presence in his life, that is, greater than his father. He says, all we know of Nellie Conway Madison is that she raised her children. There were 11 of them, by the way. 6 of them survived childhood, if that tells you how hard life was for them. That she raised her children and lived at Montpelier a very long time. She was 19 when she bore James. She lived to be 97. When James Madison was a former president, living in retirement at home, every day he and his wife Dolly visited Mrs. Madison in her room. And Brookhiser said it had some of the character of a state visit. Whether you would describe your mother in just that way, and your visits with her as state visits, almost all of us are aware that among the Lord's people, it's the way it was with Madison, in the sense that there are women who are the greater, more influential presence in our lives. That's true in our own families growing up. It's true in the families of our children. It's true in the church. It's true in this congregation. I took a few moments this past week to start naming some of the great ladies in my mind that I've known over the years and even in this church. There's so many of them, there'd only be 15 or 20 of you all who would still remember them. They went back at least to the turn of the 20th century. What great, strong Christian ladies we owe a lot to. Some such women are named in Hebrews 11, the great faith chapter. I think the fact that they're named in this chapter may be helpful to us today for a couple of reasons. One is obviously the great example of faith which spoke to their children in various ways and to their families. But the other is the fact that the reason they're named is that they lived in situations which required a particular kind of faith, faith that endures, faith that looks to the unseen, faith that keeps on moving toward the future. I've learned over the years that the mention of Mother's Day or sermons about mothers do not bring the same emotions to mind immediately in the lives of everybody. Sometimes it reminds us of griefs of loss, and sometimes it reminds us of griefs of hurt. Not every mother fits the description that maybe we would attach to the four or five that we're going to notice in our reading here today. This chapter does us the great benefit of allowing us to think aspirationally and to think of what we want to be and what we seek to be in our lives and relationships. So as we mention the characters we come across in Hebrews 11, please think about the situations in which they had to live, not necessarily of their own choice. Think about the nature of the faith that was required of them and which they were up to. And think about what their faith communicated to their families both then and then after their lives had been lived. I want to describe the people, the ladies mentioned here, the women mentioned here, and then the messages in their lives I'll place before you for you to think about with us. The first lady that we come across appropriately is in verse 11 of Hebrews 11. It's Sarah, the wife of Abraham. And the message of Sarah's faith to her family is hugely important. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. You know, in some ways, you'd have to say Sarah, as famous as she is, still experienced an unsettled and unpromising family situation. She's someone who, along with her husband, got up and left the country they were from and moved to a place not that they had not known and had not seen. They always hoped for something, but they also always lived in tents and moved around from here or there to there. And even though her husband grew quite wealthy under God's blessing, they still never did receive, or for so long did not receive what they wanted most, what they hoped for most, and ultimately not what God had promised completely in terms of the land as a possession, at least not during their lifetime. Sarah experienced some things that she tried to fix sometimes on her own wisdom. Didn't work out too well. And it brought consequences into her succeeding experience that wasn't always ideal. And I'm telling us that so that you'll know that a message like I'm talking about here is not one that just comes from people who've always had only good days. Sarah wasn't like that. And yet, this passage tells us that Sarah eventually triumphed. She had the son that she and her husband had prayed for and looked for and had been promised. And she did so even when she was past the age. And she did so since she considered him faithful who had promised. The one quality about Sarah which is placed before us to remember here is that whatever else happened in her life, she considered the God who had promised to be trustworthy and reliable. Now, again, that was not a steady, straight line thing that always remained the ideal. You remember the time in Genesis 18 when Sarah got to the place where she laughed at the possibility. But even in that situation, she maintained her loyalty with Abraham to God, the God who had promised, long enough for her laughter at the prospect to be turned into laughter at the joy of it. And she named her boy Laughter, Isaac, if you remember. And the thing about Sarah that would have lasted in her family's heritage would have been this principle that a writer to her descendants, her people, just says this way: she considered him faithful who had promised. even though she may be very human, this baseline conviction, God who promised is faithful, that conviction in a woman's life sends a message of well-being to her loved ones. We're going to be okay. I can't tell you how important that one thought is in the days that change as we grow up, and then in the days that change as we are bringing up the ones God gives to us with our children and our grandchildren as we go along. For there to be someone present whose overriding message to us is, we're going to be okay. God who promised is faithful. That gives a sense that is much needed. A lot of things about my own upbringing at this point, I'm sure, I have forgotten. But I do remember my mother saying at some very tough times, we're going to be okay. That sticks with me. I hope that's the message that we can see we send when we say the God who promised is faithful. Secondly, the Hebrew writer names her without giving us her name, Jochebed. Jochebed, if you remember, is Moses' mother. And the message she sends in her family life is, I'll be watching out for you. Verse 23 says that by faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents. You remember why that happened? Jochebed and her husband Amram encountered the terrible oppression of an unjust power, an Egyptian pharaoh. Her people were living in Egypt at the time. Grew concerned about how God was prospering the people of Israel, and decreed that every Hebrew boy who was born was to be eliminated or put to death. And that was to control, to keep the people under his power. Amram and Jochebed brought their family into a world that was not very welcoming to family life, was it? It wasn't ideal. But when their second boy was born, they already had Aaron, 3 years older than this boy. When their boy was born, they hid him for 3 months rather than surrendering him to the Pharaoh's rule, because they saw the child was beautiful. What parent, how many moms does that fit? We can see this is a lovable, a special, a beautiful child, one for whom God has a purpose, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Now take that last statement in its setting here. Not afraid of the king's edict still means afraid enough of it to hide him for 3 months. And yet they were willing to do it. They took the risk in that way. And if you remember how it happens, after that time and when Moses can't be hidden anymore, it's Jochebed, it's the mother who gathers reeds or papyrus reeds from near the river and then coats them in and weaves them into a basket and coats them inside and out with a form of tar so that the basket won't leak. And then stations her daughter Miriam, a little older than Aaron, out by the river to watch. And then strategically placed where the Pharaoh's daughter can come out and find the little boy. And when she does, Moses' sister just happens to walk up and say, would you like me to find one of the Hebrew women to take care? How do you suppose the little girl Miriam knew to say that? And the Pharaoh's daughter says, sure, I'll pay her wages to do it. So Moses' mama ends up being paid to raise her beautiful little boy for those first years of his life, using that time to instill in him a sense of faith in the Lord and a sense of the value of the Lord's people. It turned out where the sovereignty of God was a huge blessing to a family and to a life in that way. She was sending a message to her son early on. You're beautiful to me. I'll be watching out for you. And more importantly, the Lord has plans for you. Someone observed Moses was rescued and blessed by faith that was practiced before he was old enough to realize it. The world around us right now is realizing and insisting on the value of saying what they want to say to children early on. We should be even more aware in our families of how important it is to weave faith in the Lord into everyday life when our kids are young. Jochebed did that. Third, there's Rahab. Rahab's message to her family is, we're on the Lord's side. We're going to be on the Lord's side. And you remember, I'm not telling you the whole story, but just calling her Rahab. Verse 31 says, by faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient. Rahab the prostitute, she's called. And there's no way I'd try to ignore the statement that's made there. It means that she had been living in a pagan environment in Jericho, which was permeated with insecurity and was about to experience a huge political and military upheaval. She had acted in keeping with her culture up to this point, but she heard about what God had been doing. She drew the conclusion that He must be the living God, and she decided in that moment to take His side. And it turned out to be the rescue of her mom and dad and her brothers and sisters and a huge blessing to her eventual descendants. She chose to be on the side of the obedient to the Lord and not the disobedient. She gave a friendly welcome to the Lord's service and accommodated them in their task. She asked to enter into a covenant with Joshua and the people of Israel, and to be shown the same kindness that she had shown them. They provided a way for her to indicate who she was when the time came for the walls to fall, and she was rescued, and she ended up marrying Salmon, being the mother of Boaz, who married Ruth, and then the great-great-grandmother of King David. She's named in Matthew 1 and verse 5 as being one of the grandmas in the lineage of Jesus. Rahab became a woman whose faith sent a message to her household, we're on the Lord's side. No matter what, we're on the Lord's side. We're going to be on the Lord's side. I remember reading something John Gibson wrote about his own mother. Brother Gibson preached for a long time down in Little Rock, if you remember. And what I'm telling you is something he told a group at a lectureship at Harding University some years ago. He told about a day his dad liked to hunt. And one Saturday night, they'd been hunting, and his dogs were left over at his grandmother's. He went over to pick them up early that Sunday morning for church. And while on the way back, the dogs are running along, hunting dogs are running along, and John, as a little boy, was leaning out the window of the car watching the dogs run when he leaned too far and fell out the window and got a huge gash on his chin. Before going home, his dad took him to the doctor and got it all bandaged up, and he said, I would have looked a little bit like King Tut at that time. And we finally got home, and Mom wanted to know what in the world happened to me, and before we got explained to her, she said, hurry up, we're going to be late for church. And he said, there was never any doubt what came first in her mind and whose side they were going to be on. Thank the Lord for moms who communicate this one thing to their children. And then the other two ladies are just grouped together as women. But they're in verse 35. One is a poor widow and the other is a wealthy woman. But they communicate to their families, it'll be more than worth it. If you thought we're going to be okay, I'll be watching out for you, we're on the Lord's side, and whatever happens, whatever it takes, will be more than worth it. We'll get back more than we have given or invested of ourselves in the Lord. These two women, the poor widow and the wealthy woman, lived during an age of awful idolatry. People were worshiping the wrong things in the days of old Ahab and Jezebel in the northern kingdom. These were the times of the two mighty prophets, Elijah and Elisha. They were contesting the idolatry, and both of these two women helped them. Each of them also met a terrible grief, the loss of a child, the loss of a son. And each one of them, and that's what this verse says, received back their dead by resurrection. One is the widow of Zarephath, a poor, very poor lady who lived during the middle of an awful famine when there was nothing to eat or drink. And she had only a little. Elijah instructed her to take that little and to make something for him. This is God's command, by the way, and not Elijah's selfishness. She does that, and time goes by, and her boy, the only thing she had, that boy, the breath went out of him, and he died. She protested to Elijah, and Elijah uses the mighty power of God to bring him to breathing again, gives him back to his mother. The other woman is known as the Shunammite woman. She lives in the middle of Israel, and not far from 20 miles or so from Mount Carmel. She doesn't need anything. So Elisha promises her, this time next year, not so long, you'll be given a son. Well, she hadn't asked him for that. That's what he promised her. Time goes along, and one day, that boy working in the field with his dad has a heat stroke and dies. She goes, she won't send anybody. She makes that journey all the way to where Elisha is. He tries to send Gehazi, his servant, with his staff. She refuses to accept that, insists that Elisha comes back. And Elisha uses the mighty power of God to bring life back into that boy from God and to give him back to his mother. The power that their faith communicated to their families is in an idea. It's the Lord will do more for us than we do for him. We'll receive back more than we put in. It will be more than worth it. We can do what's hard. Now look at those four case studies and think of the messages that are sent in the faith of these women. Aren't those messages that need to be sent to all of our families? And where will they come from? Do the stories of these women seem imposing to you and even impossible? Or when you think about it, don't these seem to be people a lot like us for the most part, a lot like the rest of us? I think they do. All kinds of situations. This chapter isn't saying, mothers, send these messages to your children. What it's saying is, if you act with this kind of faith, you will communicate these kinds of messages to people around you now and the people who are going to come after you as time goes on. The advice that the Hebrew writer would be offering, the call that he would be issuing and does issue, is in the first part of Hebrews 12. And it's for all of us, moms or not, boys who want to honor their moms or not, this is for all of us, the proper course, and faith like this shows it, is lay aside every weight and sin that so easily besets us. Run with endurance the race that's set before us all the way through. Always be looking to Jesus, the originator and the perfecter of our faith. The message of Hebrews 11 points to that application and encourages it and says it's the right thing to do. Lay aside sin, every weight, run with endurance the race set before you. Always keep looking to Jesus. So that's the race that we need to enter, and we need to stay in it. And it's what the gospel makes open and available to us, even when there have been less than ideal circumstances in our lives, like there were in the lives of some of these ladies we read about. Someone wrote in talking about the task of motherhood and the work with children and so forth, it'll be gone before you know it. The fingerprints on the wall appear higher and higher, then suddenly they disappear. Well, the opportunities like we're presenting to ourselves this morning in the gospel are like that. We don't want to take them for granted. If we can help you to make the good confession and to be identified with Christ, or to come back to Him and get in the race that you want to run all the way through, we'll use this as an opportunity for you to indicate that to us while we stand and sing this song together.